That's where the power of the sun stops being able to push back the void of the universe. And that's like the bubble that we live, that's like the edge of the bubble that we live in the galaxy or whatever.
From your background, that's their background material now. Oh no, he's just sober.
So for me,
this is him normal.
For me, yeah, this is
the
me
outer
sober.
limits.
Yeah, so Ito is like the last stop for me on like standard recommendations for, hey, I want to be outside of Tokyo, but not too far and not too difficult to get to. Like, where do I go? That's why I just like Shimoda, for that matter, is like, it's nice, but it's too far and it's kind of difficult to get to and stuff. Ito is, you only have to transfer once, get the Atami, transfer onto the Ito line, and you can go down there. It also runs on the, what is it, the Sapphire, Odoriko.
Okay, sorry, yes, the Sapphire line. Yeah.
Right, so you can do that.
Shimoda's just like a really long way.
Yeah, yeah.
Folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over two decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, welcome back. It's been a while. For those of you here in Japan, hope you've had a fabulous of a Golden Week holiday as we have. I personally took the opportunity to hop over to South Korea for most of that week, which is not only a hop and a skip away, either by flight or, as I've done this time around, by a very comfortable, almost luxurious ferry ride out of Fukuoka City, where we're based. But also, hotel prices during this period are notoriously high here in Japan. So for me, that was a very affordable and pleasant alternative. But we're now back in the saddle and plowing on full steam ahead. Today's episode was recorded a couple of months before last month's summit. And oh, by the way, my sincere apologies. The downloads page has not gone live yet. We've had some issues with audio quality and only on the recordings from the day. Not sure exactly why, since the streaming attendees seem to have not had too many complaints on sound quality. But tech issues like these are a bit over my pay grade. So in any case, we're working on fixing those issues. And we will have all presentation in good watchable quality, hopefully, ready for you very, very soon. Apologies again for the delay. So yes, in any case, today's episode, which was recorded a couple of months before the summit, was a JREP session with Tracy, Emil, Matt, and myself in attendance. And on it, we're discussing what Matt's been up to these days. Obviously, Akiya's in rural rejuvenation projects, as is usually the case with him. But more specifically, Izu Peninsula, the Izu Islands and Ito City, Akiya renovation projects and whether those can be financed via loans from Japanese lenders, the quality and available warranties for this sort of renovation work and renovations overall, the digitization of rural Japan and internet connectivity, both in general, but also specifically for short-term stay operators and their guests. And maybe most interesting, the potential for some future projects that we've all got in mind. Curated custom weekend retreats on various topics related to our respective fields of expertise, and also a potential training course or mini academy, if you will, for Japanese realtors who want to work with foreigners but just don't know how to or could use some help doing so. So, nice, interesting little jam on all of these topics. Hope you find some value in it. Enjoy the conversation, and I'll see you again on the other side.
Recording in progress? She's not saying recording in progress. Why are you not saying recording in
progress?
It's
already recording.
I think it already started earlier.
Oh, because Emil's note taker is recording too. Okay. So. All right. The Japan Real Estate Experts panel back in session and gearing towards the summit coming up in less than 2 months, a month and a half now-ish.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me, I'm eating.
Are you trying the AI emoji thing?
Yeah. Actually, it does the come on, do it. There we go.
I actually turned all mine off. Okay, see, that's what I was doing, the love heart. Nothing happened.
Sorry. Matt, welcome back, man. It's been a while.
Yeah, sure. Sorry about that.
No worries. What are you up to, though? I keep hearing people on social media mention Akiya, so I know what you've been up to, kind of.
Yeah. There's a lot of, like, larger conglomerates that are coming into the space, mostly focused on what, like, education meets community meets IT infrastructure. So those are kind of slow burn sort of private larger but more private projects that I've been dealing with down basically on what, Tokaido area. Mm-hmm. So Kanagawa, Shizuoka, basically between call it Odawara, between there and what, Nagoya. Intra projects are kind of the name of the game right now. I've got three clients, two individual clients that are looking at spots. Mostly Ise is popular. Ito. Ito is a strange one. Actually, I'm sorry, I'm totally riffing. I don't know if you want a long answer to your question.
I was gonna ping you on like a follow-up after that, please.
Yeah, Ito is interesting. I think Ito, so for those of you who don't know, that's like, what, four stops past Atami? So not halfway down, but like a third of the way down the Izu Peninsula on the east side, so Pacific Coast. And so that's been moving pretty well. The odd thing about it is, I've noticed this for a while, but kind of just like whatever. But then it's recently been popping up on Reddit, of all places, and people are asking, like, what's up with Ito? There seems to be a lot of good property there that don't really have problems with them, but like, why are they still Akiya? Like, what's, if like nobody's buying? Like, what's going on? They're good, but nobody's buying. Is it that undesirable a city to live in or whatever? And to my knowledge, like, no, Ito, like, I mean, it's kind of what, like, slow life, sort of. It's not, you know, the most happening place, but like the boardwalks are there. The beaches are really quite nice, especially in the Sami area.
And the transportation is like, the infrastructure is amazing because of it's like along the Shinkansen route between Tokyo and Nagoya.
Right. And it's close. You've got to transfer. Ito's basically obviously it's not my favorite, the Healy. Heliopause. That's where the power of the sun stops being able to push back the void of the universe. And that's like the bubble that we live. That's like the edge of the bubble that we live in the galaxy or whatever.
From your background, that's oh no, he's just sober. So for me, this is him normal.
For me, yeah, this is
the outer sober. Limits.
Yeah, so Ito is like the last stop for me on like standard recommendations for, hey, I want to be outside of Tokyo, but not too far and not too difficult to get to. Like, where do I go? That's why I just like Shimoda, for that matter, is like, it's nice, but it's too far and it's kind of difficult to get to and stuff. Ito is, you only have to transfer once, get the Atami, transfer onto the Ito line. And you can go down there. It also runs on the, what is it, the Sapphire? Odoriko.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yes, the Sapphire Line. Yeah, she's
right. Shimoda's, so you can do that.
Shimoda's just like a really long way.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah. So basically, people have started asking, like, "What's up with Ito? It seems like there's good properties there that don't have problems with it. Yet, no, very few people are buying." And I was like, "Yeah, that is kind of curious." And I had a bit of a think about it, and I think its problem is that it's an in-betweener. Like, either you got Atami, which is, you know, the Shinkansen stop and, you know, the surrounding maybe one or two stations. And like, that's, and it's also already kind of well known. And then you've got Shimoda down at the bottom, right? Which is also like a destination. And then you've got Ito kind of like right in between, which is, I don't know, it's like something you didn't expect. It's like an extra menu item that's still good, but it's not what you went to the restaurant for. Or something. I can't think of necessarily the right
Very
anecdote.
picturesque.
Yeah, but so I, because I mean, unless there's something I don't know about Ito
But
that I.
isn't that like buying the worst house on the best street? Like, surely that's a good time. Like, the street being like a tummy through to like, that area is great. And it's on the beach and it's got all those things, but if it's still really cheap, then
And it's quite, there was an excellent Hyojo, so what is that, like corporate retreat that I toured for a client that came in, if I remember correctly, it was what, 17.8 million, and more or less pristine condition, two onsen baths connected to the onsen network, really nice kitchen with like proper slate, like a Western kitchen. With a proper like stone slate kitchen top for, I think it was five burners. I could talk about it for quite a long time. Came with a grand piano, so that was neat. Nice view of the ocean, walkable, a little bit up a hill, but not awful. With like kind of with parking, which was a bit of a point. But yeah, there's good stuff in Ito. And so I think it's like you said, Tracy, it's like worst house on the best street sort of situation. And I
Not
mean,
the
I see.
situation where people are thinking, like, we have a lot of people buying in ski resorts. So, okay, Myoko's too expensive. All the onsen places like Nozawa and Yuzawa are getting too expensive. But Tangram over there, there's a lot of more and more Australians coming in. It's just around the corner. It's not expensive yet, but it probably will be at some stage, kind of thing.
Yeah, and I mean that's more or less how I've advised things over the years is unless like if you've got cash to burn, all right, cool, let's go big. But if you're trying to buy at a good price for value, go on the periphery, right? Don't go downtown, go on the periphery. Now though, I think I'm starting to finally get like there because I we've been at it long enough that I'm starting to see movement. Starting to see like, oh, okay, it was Atami, but now it's kind of drifting over, not drifting, but Atami is still good, but it what I'm paying attention to is going a bit west and going a bit south. It's not staying just locked into what the good area was. It's evolving, right? Which I
That's the
think
same
is.
thing we do in cities too. Like, okay, this station went through like a little bit of an urban rejuvenation. Now it's expensive. Next station down the line is probably next, right?
Right. And so I think it's a it's yeah, I'm very happy with its development. I think it's I think it's neat that people are starting to notice like, hey, wait a minute, there's this spot that I didn't pay attention to before, but now I am. And what's up with that? Like that's a good development in the narrative of rural or non-Tokyo or Akiya or just real estate in general. Travel even is involved. So yeah, I think it's a really pop or positive development that
I've got a
I'm
customer who wants to
says.
sell. He bought a nice at the time big plot of land with a one, two, three, four buildings, one huge onsen resort, one smaller onsen resort, and two private houses that people can rent, like if they want the entire house.
All right.
Nagano near Matsumoto, about an hour's drive from Matsumoto City.
I'd look at details of that if you got them.
Yeah, I do. He bought it as like he was planning to turn it into not a corporate, but a retreat. He's into the wellness space in the US and he's just doesn't have the time or maybe getting a bit too old, mature, I should say, to actually pull that project off. So he wants to resell it. The structures have deteriorated in the 5, 6 years since he bought it, though. They're not in good shape at all.
Okay.
I mean, not the kind of stuff that
But
you used to, not like flocks of bats and spider webs, but
stuff that I like.
not nice like they used to be.
Is there Ginseng?
Is there a
Is
what? Sorry.
there Onsen Spring?
You could connect to it again if you wanted to, yeah.
Does that mean that they're having water piped in, or is on the
No, not
property
on
is there
site. Not on
actual?
site. Not
Oh,
piped in. Yeah.
okay. On site would be much better.
Yeah, no
So,
luck with that. There's not many of those running around for sale anymore.
all right.
I just dropped that. I just dropped you a link, Matt. Is that the one that you were talking about with that you were helping someone buy with the grand piano?
Okay.
16 guests, 8 bedrooms. It's a bit
No.
lush. No, it's a bit lush though.
That
I'm
piano.
just
That's
looking.
quite nice.
There's a lot of really nice, like I'm just looking at the prices. If you are interested in doing short-term rentals in Ito, that those prices are high, man, like nightly rates.
Yeah, look at
And there's some beautiful places down there. Like people have really gone to town on their
Ito. Ito's fucking. Oh, excuse me. Ito's friggin' nice. Here, let me do the heart thing again to make up for
I banned you.
Let me change now, Emil. Maybe you can chime in on that too. Has there been any change in the lender's attitude towards Akia projects?
No, I mean, yeah, no. Like, it's just, there's no money
Okay,
in
that
it.
was a short answer.
Yeah. So, look, there's like, look, one, I don't work in that field. Actually, Ziv, I just, speaking of Atami and Ito, just, was it yesterday? I got an email from an inquiry about a client says, "Hey, I saw this place online. It looks fantastic. It's a house in Ito on like 1,200 square meters of land. It's like 110 square meter house with a beautiful bath as well, on like on the hillside, so you have a great ocean view. And it's like eight set was it seven about just under 8 million yen.
That
Yeah, that's
was
what I'm talking about.
60,000 US ish.
Yeah, 60,000 US. And it's built in 19, was it 1991? So it's not like an old Akia. Like, I wouldn't classify it as an Akia at all, in good condition. And so that's, it's in Ito Kogen area.
Ito Kogen is nice, but it's real rocky. Like you very much need a car around there. You can take a train to Ito Kogen, or I'm sorry, Izu Kogen is what you're thinking of.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, there's good diving there. I go diving there every once in a while. But like you can take the train to the station, and then once you're off, like I don't even really think there are very many taxis there. So like
Yeah.
you definitely need a car.
Now, here's some big news for anyone interested in Akia, the abandoned vacant homes that are abundant all around Japan for very attractive purchase prices. Akia Mart, our latest sponsor, is a recently founded online search and discovery tool for Japanese real estate. Its user interface will be very familiar to users of Zillow or Redfin. The platform essentially scouts the internet for property listings, translates them into English, and displays prices in US dollars, all in one place and with a dynamic map interface that makes browsing, finding, and shortlisting your favorite properties a piece of cake. Which any of you who have been struggling with the dozens, if not hundreds, of Japanese property websites that are available online and their very clunky interface will probably find a real blessing. They've got already over 500,000 listings on the platform, and the database is expanding daily, ranging from abandoned rural homes to luxury urban properties. Akia Mart makes it easy to find your dream home in Japan, regardless of your budget. Now, while the platform is essentially free for use, here's an exclusive offer for listeners of the podcast. You can use the promo code NTI to receive $5 off Akia Mart Pro. The subscription will unlock a bunch of very attractive features for you, including unrestricted access to the entire nationwide property database and a whole range of filters, which will help power charge your search for that elusive perfect home and make it even easier. So hop over to akia-mart.com. That's AKIYA-MART, akia-mart.com, and kick off your search today.
But just to compare, right? We're talking about the property. This particular property is 8 million yen. Now, just yesterday, I was chatting with an old client of mine. He's looking at what he wants to do with his property. He bought it maybe a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. It's like just a few minutes from Shiragane Takanawa in Minato-ku. It's a tower mansion, Mount Fuji. He bought it for 155 million yen. And now the one which is just a little bit smaller, actually, on like a four floors above, is, and it's not a corner apartment, is it actually sold like 2 months ago for 198 million yen,
Nice.
right? So in the year and a half, so his one is nicer and bigger and fully renovated. It's about a 37, 30, 34% increase. He bought it 100% financed, no money out of pocket.
Oh,
And
nice.
yeah, so it's cost him basically nothing for this year and a half that he's held it, and there's a potential 50 million yen, so 400,000 US, 300,000, 350,000 US windfall just for holding it. The numbers that we talk about, I think in Tokyo and outside these Akiya, and we, you know, as if you asked about this question, like, are the banks now open to these Akiya projects?
I'm thinking more the
Yeah.
commercial part, like the type that Matt was just talking about, like, companies or individuals setting up companies and wanting to do something more creative and actually generate business using those ideas.
Yeah, but like, even if like, there could be some companies that some banks that are venturing into that, but for typical residential loans, like what I do, they're not on the radar. Look, even an ordinary property in Tokyo that's a low value is not going to be of real interest to a bank when they have risk, like very low risk, clear modern buildings that are 10 to 50 times the value of what this project is. The paperwork is the same, the risk is inherently higher, but for the Akiya stuff, yeah, there's no real incentive
Yeah,
for
it's
banks to
super
chase after those kind of.
the amount that I have to explain what you've just said to, I mean, granted, this is why I now charge like $150 per hour long call just to like field questions and stuff, is that question comes up a bunch of, hey, well, I've only got 20 million yen, but I want to buy something in Meguro. Can I get financing for it? Well, what? What universe are you coming from? This is ridiculous. Like, no, you can't. You don't understand any of these things.
Even if they're
So,
residents.
yeah, oftentimes stuff like that comes up. They, you know, I. If you want to roll those dice, that's basically why, like, you want to come into the casino, okay, great, you got to pay. Right? If you want to ask what are, should be, what, unreasonable questions, well, then yeah, I'll give you an answer to that, but like that doesn't get me anywhere. So if you want an answer to that, like, you're going to pay for it, right? Do your research. It's not that hard to figure out that,
Well,
20 mil in Meguro for an Akiya is not going to get you financing or anything.
I mean, there's, but one thing I've come across is when people ask these questions in the Japanese market, it doesn't make sense. Like, this is a, what it comes across as a bit of a foolish question or an unrealistic question. But when you understand where they're coming from in their home country, be it Australia, the US, you can get financing for fixer-uppers. So they're coming with that mindset for a fixer-upper in Japan, and they don't realize
Right,
that
right.
it doesn't align. So
Well, it's
the
because
question.
that's because there's no recognized appreciation on the property, the dwelling. It's like the value is like the bank considers the value in the land rather than if you do improvements to the house, they don't, that's not really counted as a improvement to the value of the overall project, right?
And that's the reason for it. But my point rather is, by understanding where the person comes from, like the actual home country and
Oh,
how the
yeah.
system works there, then their question does make sense because they're applying their foreign paradigm onto the Japanese market. And so our job is really just to explain this is why it's like that. But their question doesn't make sense when you look at it just within Japanese framework. But when you realize where they're coming from, you go, okay, yeah, I see your expectation is the Western expectation trying to do it in Japan. It's the same why they, same reason why people think, well, I'll just flip it, I'll buy it and flip it. Well, the flipping doesn't work in Japan the same way because there's lots of like rules and laws and implications, tax implications that do not favor individual people doing flips. You need to warranty it,
Plus,
right? You
you're
need financing.
competing with companies that have a much better network to do that than you do, right?
Yeah, you're at a competitive disadvantage. And also, you, as if you're doing renovation flips, Even as a corporation, like you need to warranty it. You can't just, it's not buyer beware. Like if you're a flipper in the US or Australia, you can flip it once a contract was signed, you're out. Sorry, you bought it as is, essentially. Right? In Japan, that there's lots of protections in place. So it's very difficult for an individual to do that. And even like a lot of our renovation properties, they have this thing called R1. It's a third, it meets a certain renovation standard, and you have third party insurance or third party warranty on it. So if the, this is for both new homes and renovation mansions, if the builder or the renovation company, if they go bankrupt the next day, you still have a third party warranty that comes with your property that's insured by a by another party, which the developer has paid for. Now, in order for that developer or renovation company to be able to get that warranty or that third party insurance, they need to meet a certain criteria. And also that insurer comes and visits the property upon completion and certifies that the work is to an acceptable standard, that they're going to warranty it. So you can't just have any cheap flip.
Yeah, I bought some properties with pretty crappy renovations. If that's the compliance, I'm not impressed.
Yeah. Well, it depends on, is it a renovation company that is selling it versus has the person just done wallpaper before they leave? Are they selling it as a reform bookend, as a renovation property?
A real estate company. I mean, I don't know if they're doing the renovation themselves or they outsourced it, but we bought it from a real estate company and it was n definitely not an impressive renovation. I mean, it worked until it didn't. Like your foot kind of starts feeling the soft spots on the floor within a couple of months. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's stuff that, you know, depends. There's certain items that they're covered in their warranty. And also in the renovation, it says very specifically if it's new items that they've renovated, then that's covered. If it's existing that they haven't renovated, then that's not covered in the scope. So a good example is windowsills. So windowsills, often they don't replace them in the renovation, especially in the mansion. So if they are falling apart or tattered, then the renovation company doesn't need to warranty to that level. This property I just told you about that was in the Shiragane area. It's like I think 15 years old or so. They renovated everything, but the front door, the door stop on it, the hydraulic door close mechanism, the hydraulic on it started to fail. And it's about like 20,000 yen for the replacement. We called the original renovation guys and said, look, should this be under your warranty? And they said, look, that is existing item. We don't cover that. So even within that, this sort of scope, if they've redone the flooring, like actually removed the flooring and redone it, then it'll be warranted. If they've just resurfaced it, then maybe no. It depends. But that's also included in the price. Yeah, but that's why, but because of that fact anyway, is why it's hard for individuals to, again, bring their Western paradigm of stuff. I'm going to just buy, fix it, and flip it, and then leave without any, you know, any sort of recourse. Seller beware. Oh, sorry, buyer beware. That's not the option in in Japan or in Tokyo at least. Yeah, but I do like, but jumping onto the financing stuff, Matt. You know, like again, this if you work here, financing is really easy. You know, 8 times your annual income. Again, this guy was able to buy 155 million yen property, and his closing costs came to about 8 million yen, 8%. So I think the total loan for was like 165 million yen. And so he didn't pay a single cent out of pocket, and he got his interest rate was 0.29%. It still is 0.29%. So he basically just signed the paper and paid nothing but like a
Sure, give
million
me
dollar property.
37%.
Now I own
Yeah.
it. I haven't paid well, but whatever. Now I own it. And let me just get the money, the
I mean,
land or the
he's outgoing
windfall
what,
from it.
500,000 yen a month for, you know, so 6 months at 12 million yen. And that's paying mostly the loan, right? So in
That's
the 2 years,
amazing.
year and a half, he's paid like, you know, 50, 60 grand off it. Interest has cost him nothing. Yeah, and so that just the scale is completely different.
Totally.
When we that's why this person that contacted me asking for the property in Atami for like 8 million yen. Like that's kind of, yeah, just that's almost the commissions on a property like this. These Tokyo properties. Yeah, so I've already contacted Ziv about that. I need to follow up because I think that's more in his wheelhouse.
Now, if you've attended any of our recent JREP Summit events in Tokyo or online, you've probably heard our sponsor, Robert Miller from Innovatius.com. He's been in web solutions here in Japan for the past 25 years, and he's also an active investor in Japanese real estate property, as well as global online property, which is his specialty and what his company Innovatius is all about. They offer a full suite of website services for entrepreneurs and small business owners, including all aspects of web design and management, backup and updates, content formatting and editing, proactive maintenance and error fixing, you name it, with a strong focus on SEO excellence, which is what gets you those hardcore top-of-the-list search engine rankings. But there is a difference. Innovatius works off a simple, all-inclusive monthly subscription model, as opposed to the typical outdated and confusing project model. So you never have to wonder how much any request for any work to be done on your website might cost. It's always $497 per month. And if that's not enough, if you've mentioned you've heard of their services on the Japan Real Estate Podcast, you'll also get 10% off this monthly price for life. Also, and equally important, if not more, you can try out Innovatius for just 1 month, then switch them off, on again later if you want, and so forth. There are no minimum subscription terms. Now, if you're a small business owner, managing and growing a website is super distracting and time-consuming, right? That's exactly where Innovatius comes in. Robert's team takes care of all of that for you so that you can focus on what you do best. So feel free to email Rob on robert@innovatius.com. And his team will conduct a full SEO and website audit on your site, reveal anything that you should address to increase your website's appeal, and provide you with an easy-to-read detailed report with your own branding so that you can make some informed decisions on your online strategy and watch your business grow as you implement it. So once more, robert@innovatius.com. Drop him a line and get your website reviewed today.
Well, Matt, what are you going to be? Have you given some thought to what you're going to be talking about at the upcoming summit? We picked Tracy's and Emil in my head last time, but we didn't have you.
Oh.
Well, Akia.
Yeah, that's maybe a good question. I think probably infrastructure is.
A what structure? Sorry?
Infrastructure.
Infrastructures, okay.
Is, I mean, like rural infrastructure, because about last time I spoke about experiences and things like that. But I mean, now I've got a good bit more experience with kind of what wrangling, not just individual properties, but like what communities, I guess. I don't like that word very much, but yeah, like especially digital infrastructure has been, I've got a project that I'm working on up in Hakone now as well. For just doing it right. I guess this is maybe renovation, really, is kind of what I'm talking about. Of like, what are the things that you need in order for, you know, your rural lifestyle to be a success, and especially to make it more attractive. And one thing that I've found that I advise and consult on a good bit is, again, just digital infrastructure and the various different kind of resources that are a bit, like right now, NTT, they tend to throttle a few spots, it seems like. And so that gets in the way of basically having repeat customers. Because if you're relying on, let's say domestic Japanese, you're probably okay. And like, they like your place and they've been going there for a while and whatnot. But especially with the tourism thing coming in and word of mouth still playing a part in that, I know I keep a basically a blacklist of accommodations, ryokan, Airbnbs, you know, basically anywhere that you can stay that they might be nice, but they just don't meet the standards for what I need as somebody who like does a lot of work in the cloud and, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And people are starting to come around to it. I was actually surprised that the accommodation up in Hakone of all places.
Oh, they're listening. Like, yeah. Okay.
So that's good. There's I'm just talking with Tracy, like I do, and even now with the whole like the evolution, right? Things starting to move. It's not just Atami, but it's kind of going down here a little bit and going over here, but like it's evolving, seems to be growing. So too seems to be the mindset of what do we do with this thing, right? Because again, one thing I've run into a lot has basically been if I basically make any kind of critique on again digital infrastructure or something like that, the kind of go-to response has always been, well, if you want Wi-Fi, go somewhere else. And I've actually been, I don't know if you've seen me complaining on LinkedIn recently about cafes. It's the same problem. Look, it's 2025, you're in accommodation, I'm an adult, I'm a professional, like I probably have stuff to do. And even if I don't, if there's an emergency, like it would be really good if there was connectivity.
NTT has been pushing the WiMAX 5G on mm-hmm. us and on our customers, but when they get mm-hmm. out to those areas that you're talking about, it's not what it's cut out to be. A lot of people have been canceling the contracts and going back to fiber.
Well, fiber is good, and then there's, you know, there's the whole Starlink thing, which yeah. comes with certain, you know, depending on how you like your celebrities.
That's pricier, though, isn't it?
It's not that much pricier. It's relatively reliable. I'm actually experimenting with that right now.
Okay. So yes, please. Give us updates.
Yeah.
Someone just posted, actually, I was looking this morning, saying I'm sick of, you know, all these like, you know, mobile routers. I got my Starlink, and it's someone I know. I've LinkedIn or Facebook, I don't remember. And it's like 6,000 yen a month for Starlink in Japan.
If I remember correctly, it's like 50,000 for like the startup pack. Like, oh, I got all my hardware and, you know, the stuff that you need. It's like 50K up front. And then, yeah, it's between 6,000 and 9,000 yen a month for the business side of things. It's more expensive. But I do see some very mischievous, let's say, plays that could be made with regards to like domestic infra providers and Star. Like, you could basically just go around all the bullshit that NTT and whatnot like pretends, you know, 1 gigabit speed. Like, what are you talking about? That doesn't exist. Right. And just using a different provider that's on a satellite network. Which, you know, to me is just like, look, your shit doesn't work, I don't want to use it, so I'm going to go use this other provider. That's the beauty of the open market, baby.
Well, that's why with Starlink, it makes it so accessible, especially to those regions, because a lot of times mm-hmm. you may have just NTTs the only provider, or yeah. if you're, I know some buildings, like some mansions, don't actually, like, will have still just maybe a cable mm-hmm. connection. They don't have fiber available to the rooms. It's still
exactly. Covered. Well, and then there'll be issues about wiring. There'll be issues about routers. There'll be issues about repeaters. There are like all kinds of issues that like aren't complicated necessarily, but really negatively affect the like modernity, if not also usability of a given establishment. And like, yeah, if you're a hotel, you're in this to make some money, man. Like, come on. Get off your high horse. Just fix the problem and reap the rewards. Like, what is going on? Very frustrating. But yeah, so being able to talk about kind of those sort of things, I think, is off the cuff what I may or may not speak on at the upcoming event.
Tracy, you mainly in Tokyo, I suppose infrastructures are not an issue. Like, do you ever have guests who complain about Wi-Fi speed or anything not being available?
Well, yeah, we have the issue that we have with infrastructure is the time it takes to get the thing connected, right? The fiber.
Could be about a month sometimes, yeah.
You have to wait, and then you have to be at the place, and if you miss the appointment, you've got to like get then push that to another month. It's busy. And once it's in and up and running, though, like we've got one place and it's just like getting lightning speeds. But we've tried those tower things as well. And on a three-story house, there's dead spots, and you know, you have more than one person trying to Zoom call. It's not good. So, yeah.
And,
so,
Sorry, I'm interrupting.
And I was just about to say that what we've done as well is we've actually done away with portable Wi-Fis. We used to include, like, obviously all of our houses have unlimited, you know, non-me horde, packet horde plans for the home stuff. But we've done away. We used to give a portable Wi-Fi as well, but we've done away with it because we were finding that most guests now have been able to get good roaming plans with their existing provider, so they get to use their own number. The evolution over the last 10 years is 15 years has been amazing. So we knew that people would say, oh yeah, I've got a roaming plan. I just landed in Japan and I like switched to, I think it was like 3G or something. And I went, oh, no, you don't. No, you won't.
That's my current house.
Yeah.
What's that? 900,
isn't it? Yeah. 900
download, 600 upload.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, see, that's pretty good.
And then,
pretty damn good.
But
while streaming this.
But with modern phones, like the newer phones, they're getting eSIMs and they're getting, you know, all of those things which you didn't, people used to have to switch out SIM cards and it was a real, like, it was really annoying. But now people are roaming so much more. They're using their own phones and they're actually getting decent prices for their holiday plans. And so, but if they do want a portable Wi-Fi, then we give them the option of renting one. And we actually outsource, like, we just give people a link. So, like, if you want to rent a portable Wi-Fi, use this company. And then they get a discount when they use my code. And yes, we get a little bit of passive income. It's not much, let's be fair. But it gives people the option and it saves. I mean, we were spending $6,000 a month per property.
Yeah.
As well as the, you know, whatever it is, the $6,000, $8,000 a month per property. So it basically halved our costs, which means that we can have better pricing. So yeah, we reduced our, just trying to streamline costs. But I think gone are the day, and hopefully there's no hosts left who are only providing portable Wi-Fis, because I think that's really lame.
Oh, I'm sure.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens. And they're just a delight to stay in. Fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which, if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know. They're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own. But longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home, with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku, or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today. See how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now back to the podcast.
And maybe this segues into a topic that you and I were talking about, Tracy.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's a lot of learning, I think, that can be done in, like, exposure, maybe, for lack of a better word. But so we've got this great event coming up, super excited about it. And Tracy and I were kind of talking about, well, you know, there's like other place, and I already do this kind of as my top of funnel sales, or part of my top of funnel for sales, of just like getaways, weekend getaways, retreats, call them, and going to spots that have done things right, so that not only are you hearing from people about, well, you got to do this, you got to do that, you got to do the other thing, but you can actually see it in action. And so, yeah, Tracy and I were kind of throwing around the idea of like, what if we put together, like, in one form or another, some, like, you know, there's the big annual or twice annual event of the gathering of the J Repians,
the realist summit,
the Dreptiles.
she was having yeah.
The J Rillians, okay, and yeah, then but then customize. Sorry, you're meandering, Matt. I'm going to jump in and say, but be able to offer in between those times, be able to offer curated custom retreats for J Rep people, you know, so really customize very small groups, you know, focused on whatever it is that person that group is focused on. So whether that's what, like, you're going into the countryside because you're interested in setting up a wellness retreat, or you're just wanting to set up an IT hub, or you're interested in setting up a, you know, using the resources in the area and to build your business plan. So that was a kind of idea that we were kicking around. So
I like that.
That's any thoughts? Yes.
Yeah. So just, I guess, to rephrase for my own understanding, because this is the first I've heard about it, is you're considering sort of doing a retreat getaway to a location, and it's basically workshopping Akia, short-term stay, all the stuff that we kind of discuss in the JREP Real Estate Summit that we hold, but a more sort of focused and refined smaller group
getaway. Like hands-on.
Hands-on. But also, you know, include some nice things like, you know, scuba diving if that's your jam, or, you know, wellness. That those, all those things are possible.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and, you know, these are obviously for serious people, like people who are serious investors. Like, these are not like, oh, wouldn't it be nice to? These are like, well, right. I'm ready to now. Let's, when the rubber hits the road, let's see what it's going to look like. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think there's that group that is, okay, they come to a summit, they come to like a, they watch YouTube videos and this podcast, and then they'll attend the, so the next step is they'll pay and attend the summit in person or remotely. And then if they're still interested, that's when they go the next step and do something like this. Is there something planned yet, or is it still just workshopping?
So, I mean, I've been doing this for 2.5 years or so, both publicly and privately. I did 6, I think it was, last year, and it works real well. Sell it out every time. It's been relatively agenda-less, so that's not to say it has to be, but again, like, a lot of our content is very educational content, kind of on point and, you know, like, not textbook necessarily, but, like, you know, it's kind of focused and stuff. Then people just kind of explore a little bit around the concept as well and, like, figure it out.
That agenda. I think that's a new phrase.
Right, right. But, yeah, I mean, I've got all sorts of sites in mind that I've used, that I've worked with previously. I'm going out to, down in Shizuoka to some spots probably in 2 weeks' time, also out on the Izu Islands. That's a whole other.
There's a lot of info. We get a lot of people interested in those spots actually at the moment. It seems to be one of those places that's getting a bit more popular as well. And there are a lot of bubble era beautiful homes left out there.
Yeah.
Well, the Izu Islands.
Izu, not the island, sorry. No, Izu Peninsula.
Peninsula's good. The islands are wild.
Really?
Very interesting. Yeah, I've been going out there for the last 3 or 4 months. In fact, I've got a meeting with Oshima's, some people out there about hosting retreats and stuff on those islands as well, around that island as well. So, yeah, there's a lot of interest in it. Like, there's just cool stuff. This is just show people cool stuff and talk about real estate and, you know, see where it goes.
Our good friend of the panel, and maybe one of the second most attractive person Anton, he held a workshop.
Second most after you.
I think.
Thank you. Listen, you guys can assume who the first one is. I didn't say, but thank you for that, Trace. I was giving us all flowers. It's obvious, right? Everyone does. So, but anyway, he held a workshop at his farmhouse for DIY. I think he had about like 10 or 12 people there. Just doing their like helping strip his place down and clean it up. But yeah, he held sort of a basically a real workshop. And that's one of his plans to move forward. And I mentioned perhaps on our last podcast that we did, I've been doing a similar version, but modified to my kind of clientele. So whereas you guys go out and do the workshopping at a retreat, my clients are largely local Tokyoites who live and work here. And they're generally business professionals. So I've been doing now going to offices to be doing a mini version of my presentation
Oh, nice.
in their office.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned last
Yeah,
time you
you
spoke. Has that
mentioned
been going
that the other
well?
day.
Yeah, so I just got an email for the one we have coming up in mid-March for one of the big recruiters here in Tokyo. They've already got 16 people registered at this stage, and that's still 3 weeks away. And the one I did for a big IT one last month was, I think there were about 50 or 60 people on that webinar. And they're all
Nice.
just like local Tokyoites on proper full-time employees,
Oh,
proper salaries.
speaking of seminars, I wanted to shoot an idea by you. I've been thinking to do with Chikako, if she'll give me some of her time, which is very difficult recently, but if not with somebody else, maybe a series of seminars, or maybe even more like a training program for English-speaking Japanese realtors who want to work with foreigners. Because we keep running across
That's
all of these
interesting.
people. I mean,
Yeah,
they're
that's.
all interested in doing it, and then when they actually get down to it, they get stuck in all kinds of places.
Yeah, they don't know how to do it. Yeah, like that actually, that would
Advertising,
be
especially.
re that would be a really, so because I mean, it's sort of the other side of the coin from what you're doing with like helping people work with Japanese realtors. So it's like, well, teach Japanese realtors how to deal with like the great unwashed barbarians, right? So
Yeah, could
interesting.
if that happens, can a part of that please be something about web design?
About what? Web design.
About web design.
Oh, that's a whole different. I think actually that's
Yeah.
something to talk to Robert about, maybe. Yeah,
I
interesting.
mean, like if but yeah, if you want
That's
to
a very
access
good thing to talk to Robert about.
the Western market, like you can have a not Westernized website and still you can do business with it, but why are you putting so much more effort, right, into doing that business when if you just like had a maybe a separate site or a just something that appeals to what Western audiences are looking for, it's very likely to expect you would do faster and better and more business,
I think you're
right?
right. I haven't even worked on a draft syllabus yet, but I think definitely one of the things in there should be marketing and advertising to a Western crowd, right?
Yeah, because I see I'm speaking with two what like you'll say like legal and kind of that area, not necessarily real estate, and they're going for the the Western market, and I mean there's still lorem ipsum stuck in their online webs, like what do
Oh,
you do? Yeah, how
hey,
are
those
you
are
a
Emil's
professional?
mascots. Watch out, man.
Yeah, I was gonna say they're the names of my mascots.
Right? But like, I mean, if especially for like legal services or brokerage or serious business, and you've got space holder text still in there, and then on the
And
bottom it's like
email
says,
addresses, don't get me started. Yeah.
yeah, exactly. If you get it, we all get it. Like that, it's not absurd. And yeah, I could rant about this forever, but yes, please, if you do that, I would humbly request that be part of the syllabus.
All Awesome. I'll have to head off in 5 minutes. So unless there is anything that we wanted to discuss.
No, I think we're all looking forward to it. Emil and I have to put our heads together and get these ticketing stuff sorted. So all good. Yeah.
Okay, well, I mean, we haven't talked much about the summit, so this might be published way after the summit, and we can pretend that you did it on time.
Okay. All right.
All right. Thanks for your time, guys. Talk to you soon.
Take
Okay,
care.
later.
See you. Bye bye.
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 So there you have it. Interesting ideas there, I thought. Would love to hear your thoughts about both of these topics that we were just discussing before closing, both the weekend retreats and what topics you'd like us to dig into when we do those. And also, in case you are a Japanese English-speaking realtor and happen to be listening to this podcast, what are your thoughts on our agent training course, which, by the way, will also come with introductions to foreign clients. So you'll definitely be getting your money's worth almost immediately upon graduating our little academy. So let us know what you thought about both of these ideas. Really looking forward to your feedback. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa, and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company, and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks, and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time, and until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.